For too long, the fertility market has been bewildering, overwhelming, and frankly, I think has downright ignored the needs and difficult experiences of the people they're supposed to be serving. Ovum has made it their mission to change this completely. Now, I am extremely choosy about who I promote on this podcast because I'm very protective of my listeners and audience, which is why you've probably only ever heard one spoken ad like this before. So it's with complete confidence, excitement, and pride that I can share this amazing company with you. Ovum care about you, truly. From creating products to support conception and fertility that are designed by doctors and backed by the latest science without cutting any corners, from adding access to meditations I've personally written and recorded inside their pregnancy test boxes, Ovum is founded by individuals who've navigated infertility themselves. I really couldn't be more proud to partner with them and tell you about them. Ovum is driven by the belief that everyone who is trying to conceive deserves better, and I am 100% behind this ethos. So head over to startwithovum.com and use code LIFERAFT10 for 10% off their tests and supplements.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello and welcome officially to Fertility Life Raft. I am Alice Rose and I'm here live with Emma Haslam from Your IVF Abroad. How are you, Emma?
I'm good, thanks, Alice. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. So we're recording this live with some of my gorgeous members. So hello to my members as well. We won't get everyone to say hello because that would be long, but we... but we love you and we know you're here. So thank you for joining us this morning. So Emma, I'm really happy to have you here because we were just chatting before I hit record about your story and about why you set up your company. So do you want to just share, like, what was your story, and yeah, tell us a bit more about you and what has led you to do what you do?
Yeah, sure. So hi everybody, again, thanks for turning up live. It's lovely when people do that. So yeah, I'm Emma Haslam and I'm an infertile mum of one. And my journey began just after we got married in, when was that, 2014, when I still naively believed that you just had sex and got pregnant. And infertility wasn't something that ever kind of crossed my mind. Probably sounds rather arrogant, really, but you don't necessarily think about it until something, you know, happens to you. So we began kind of casually trying around the time that we got married, and then 6 months of casually trying then moved into like really trying and doing all the old wives tales stuff, and then it getting a bit more serious and just nothing was working, and I was like, well, maybe there's an issue, it's been a year, let's go to the doctor. So we went to the GP who ran some initial tests and they sent us down to gynae because they thought that there was potentially issues on both sides. And they diagnosed me as perimenopausal. And I was only like 33, I think, at the time. And my husband had a male factor infertility issue, so low sperm count and motility. So it was a bit of a double whammy blow, really. So again, a bit naively, we were like, oh, it's okay, we'll just have IVF. Not knowing what any of that means and not knowing that that's not a guarantee anyway. But also, you know, as you know, if you're in the UK, there's lots of factors that, you know, dictate whether or not you get the funding. And unfortunately, due to my BMI, I was not able to get the funding. So we were sent away with no help or support or suggestion around how I could lose the weight. It was just like, go away, lose 6 stone, and then get back in touch. But miraculously, I did manage to lose that weight, which, I mean, it's all gone back on again. Well, it's all gone back on again and some's come off. I mean, people who struggle with a BMI will probably resonate with this. It took me quite a while. You know, I didn't want to go down the drastic route. I can, you know, I know people who have, and it's so much pressure to have to lose that weight. And I was fit and healthy otherwise, which is the frustrating thing. And the other frustrating thing is I, you know, was perimenopausal, so time was not on my side. And yet here I am having to go and lose all of this weight. So I lost the weight and then went back to the appointment, like, yeah, you were ready now for IVF. And they were like, oh, I'm really sorry, but the rules have changed again. And you now need to get your BMI to under 30. And I was like, what? You know, and I'm smiling, but actually, but, you know, it wasn't funny. It was like probably one of the lowest, worst points of our journey, because I was like, I've just lost 6 stone, which was, you know, an incredible amount of weight. It was really difficult, and I'm a comfort, I mean, I'm an eater for all occasions, but, you know, to kind of be going through infertility and then that being one of your comfort blankets taken away, and, you know, to have achieved something like that and then to be told, actually, no, that's not good enough. And that's how it felt. But I knew that had I lived like 5 miles down the road, I would have got funding because they were still at a BMI of 35 limit. So I was really angry at this point. And again, offered no help or support. It was just like, call us when you've lost another 2.5 stone. And so we left that appointment and I said to Adam, my husband, I can't lose another 2.5 stone. I mean, at this point, I was like a size 14, you know, I was really fit and healthy. And again, time was marching on. So we thought, right, no, we're not going to do that. But I had no idea what we were going to do. So began to look at fertility treatment in the UK, had some consultations. Now, this is just my experience. I'm not suggesting that every clinic in the UK will be like this. But for us, the three that we talked to, we didn't find them to be particularly transparent, particularly around things like costings. It was hard work to get the costings from them. One example was I got some costing, asked for costings, couldn't get them, spent 250 quid, maybe 300 quid on a consultation, only then to find out the costings afterwards and think, oh my God, we couldn't afford to use them anyway. You know, we'd moved back in with my mum as newlyweds, which is obviously, you know, a privilege to be able to do that, but not ideal newlywed circumstances.
No.
And we'd stopped doing everything that we like doing to kind of focus on saving this money, and took all of the joy out of our lives. You know, it was just full on, as I know you guys understand. So we had 3 consultations, didn't really feel we got the click with any of the 3 clinics, spent about £1,000 and we're no further forward. And it was extremely frustrating. And we'd been told by the NHS we had like a 3-5% chance of conceiving, which was agreed with privately. So it was a really, really difficult time, because we were saving up all this money and, you know, we had very little chance of it actually going to work. I honestly can't remember what led me to Google fertility treatment abroad, because as we were chatting about before, Alice, back then, in like 2000 and let's say 15, 16, it's not something, you know, I mean, I don't think I was even on Instagram then, but there certainly wasn't the kind of community we've got now. Mm-hmm. You know, there was some old posts on like Mumsnet, but that wasn't really where I was hanging out, you know, and it was like this, like really strange thing to possibly consider doing. I remember telling my mum what we were thinking of doing. She was absolutely horrified. She was like, don't do that, find another way. I was like, but there isn't another way, mum. Like, it's so much cheaper. And I started to do some research. And she was like, yeah, but how do you know it's safe? I was like, well, I'll just, you know, I'll keep doing my research. And as I said to Alice earlier, you know, honestly, did I fully know when we'd made that decision? No, but we were vulnerable and desperate. Mm. And what I did know was that my money was going to go further to give us more chances. And I really liked the clinics that we spoke to. You know, some of the consultations were free. And we didn't really have any other choice. We'd looked at surrogacy and we'd looked at adoption and didn't feel that they were right for us. And it would have been, if we'd have gone in the UK, we'd have probably saved enough to have like one round here. And obviously we couldn't live with my parents forever. And then that would have been it. And with such low chances, it just felt like we literally might as well set, you know, the money on fire. Mm. So what made me Google it, I don't know, other than we're quite well traveled. We love traveling. And, you know, I know that we're not necessarily always the best at everything in this country, although we might think we are, you know, having been to other places, you know, things run more efficiently in different areas. And I was like, well, why not? And so that's kind of how I got to go abroad. And I had a great clinical experience, but I went through the process feeling very anxious, very overwhelmed, very unsure about what I was doing, if it was the right thing. I didn't know where to get my questions answered, like impartially. I didn't know if I'd chosen the right clinic for our needs. And that was very stressful and overwhelming. And having no one to turn to and frantically Googling for support, and it just didn't exist back then. It wasn't there. But yeah, I'd been through a great experience in terms of clinically, and I wanted people to know that if you're having to fund private fertility treatment, that there are other choices to consider that may or may not be right for you, but just to know that it's out there and if done right can be amazing, and to avoid some of the pitfalls, you know, that I suppose we encountered or could have encountered because we were winging it, a lot of it. I mean, I did a lot of research, but I didn't know what I was doing like I do now. And so it could have gone the other way. Fortunately, it didn't. And we did have as IVF goes, we had a good experience. So when I was on my maternity leave, had horrible postnatal depression, and I needed, I think, something to kind of channel some of the trauma and upset of infertility. And so that's what I decided to do. And that was like 3.5 years ago, and I've never looked back.
Wow, what a story. I can't believe what you had to go through in order to get here. Like what you had to do with, you know, everything that you tried, and then to have that double whammy of, issues on both sides, that I can't imagine that must have been so difficult. So what went through your head when they said that you were perimenopausal at 33, was it? Yeah.
Yeah. I was devastated, particularly when I was being sent away to lose weight, and it just felt like a ticking timer going off in my head all of the time. And we actually ended up having double donation. Now, this wasn't something that was mentioned to us in the UK. I'm not sure why. And to be honest, it wasn't even on our radar as an option. I didn't know anything about it. But when we had our consultations with the clinics abroad, they said, look, if you want to have a go with your own eggs and sperm, you can, but it's not going to work, which was probably more of a, oh, okay, no one's ever said that to us before. But everyone's different, I think, when it comes to things like donor conception. But for us, I think I finally just felt some hope, and so did my husband. And maybe weirdly, or not weird, I don't know, because there were issues on both sides, it was a little bit easier for us personally to kind of accept that it was both of us. And my husband really struggled and convinced himself for ages that it was like going to be his fault. I mean, it's no one's fault, obviously, but he convinced himself that he'd had an operation on his testicles when he was younger. I mean, he loves it when I talk about his testicles.
They all do. They love it.
Loves it. But, you know, he carried a lot of guilt and shame around that, even though I would never blame him, but actually ended up being both of us. So I really like the honesty around that, because yes, we could have gone through it, put ourselves through it and wasted money, but they were like, it's not going to work. You can do it if you want, but it's not going to work. So that was probably harder to hear. But then at the same time, there was hope, because they were like, you know, you've got options, and, you know, these chances of success then rocket up. So while it was difficult to hear I was perimenopausal, it was more difficult because there was no plan around it. It was just like, you're perimenopausal, off you go, lose some weight. Whereas when I was then told, actually, yeah, you're perimenopausal, it's not going to work as well, that for some reason felt, I don't know, better, because there was somebody who was giving me options. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that take on it. Just an incredibly positive way of looking at things. And was there, I mean, gosh, what you went through with so you had all that information through with, you know, the UK clinics. Mm-hmm. You were sent away to lose 6 stone, which you went away and did. I can't imagine how difficult that must have been. And also there's this very big question mark over the BMI and funding and all of that anyway. I mean, it's awful what happens. And I get a lot of people messaging me saying, yes, I was also turned away, or, you know, that's a huge, huge issue here in the UK, isn't it? So the fact that you went away, you were like, fine, I'll lose 6 stone. Watch me. And then you did it. And then the little fuckers, excuse me, but really, I can't imagine how absolutely gutting that must have been for them to then come back and say, oh no, we changed the rules again. I mean, what the
that was worse, the worst thing for me on the whole thing. So that was worse for me than being told you can't have your own biological children, which for some people will probably sound really like, what? But I think because we'd already explored surrogacy, we'd already explored adoption, we were open to other paths to parenthood. And obviously, everybody's plan A is to have children biologically, well, to have sex, first of all, and have children that way. But, you know, life doesn't always, go to plan. And I think sat here now with my four-year-old, I genuinely wouldn't change how he came to be, because if we had a biological child, then he wouldn't be him, would it? So I wouldn't change that now. Now, I wish for a simpler story for him. You know, I hope that he's okay with how he came to be. But I also very much believe, try to sort of stay in the present where I can rein myself in, because some people hate their biological parents. And I just think, you know, honesty is important. You know, he knows in a child-friendly way, he knew it too, because it came up, you know, he kind of knows some narrative around it, and, you know, we'll love and support him whatever and whatever his choices are. And you can tie yourself in knots about, well, what if this and what if that, but, you know, ultimately he's a very wanted little boy, and, you know, we went through a lot to get him, didn't we?
You went through so much. I mean, yeah, thank you for sharing that, because, yeah, there's a lot in your story, so much that kind of has gone into it. And it sounds like you are, you know, we obviously focus a lot on mindset in the work that I do, and the fact that you're able to sort of sit in the present and say, this is what has happened, so this is what I'm going to do about it. And that is a really I mean, I'm sure there must have been lots of moments of frustration, and you were saying, I think actually, yeah, that you were angry. So it was the bit when they said, you know, all the rules have changed, and that was the moment where you felt so angry about it. But you know what, anger gets such a bad rep, and I'm such a champion for anger, because actually it can really give you the motivation and energy to get to the next point where you need to get to in order to, you know, keep your story moving forward, right? So when you're feeling that level of emotion and that frustration with the UK clinic saying, nope, we're not going to give you the funding, you know, that led you to keep exploring what your options were, to then decide, right, we're going to think about going abroad, and we're going to look into this. So, and that was interesting that you said that your mum was absolutely horrified when you said but I was just saying, we were just before we pressed record, like, it did feel quite out there just only a few years ago, and it's the same
again.
2014, 2015, where I was in it all. And I knew one person who had gone abroad, and that was like Simon's colleague or something. I can't remember exactly who it was, but like someone he worked with. And I was really like, whoa, that feels big, like going abroad, you know. It's like, but what's crazy about that is that, you know, you look at what goes on in the UK with clinics, and I'm sure there are loads of that. I mean, I know that there's lots of things which are not as ethical as they should be. There's certainly not the transparency of like the funding issue for the NHS. I mean, there's so many things that are wrong in the UK about fertility treatment. So it's just the fact that it's not here, you know, for people listening. Yeah, obviously, I do have global listeners, so it's you know, wherever you are in the world, if you choose to go outside of your home country, you know, I just feel like there is a bit of a leap. So when you said to your mum and she was horrified, tell me a bit more about that. What happened when you, did she eventually sort of come round to it?
I mean, now she's like, if she ever meets anybody, she's like, you should go abroad. I was like, what is the solution, mum? Like, I can't live with you forever. You know, and explained the cost. And I suppose as I began to do more research and showed her stuff, I mean, I still think she was horrified, but ultimately it was our decision and there was not really any other choice. I was like, so we use it, you know, we spend all our money, go once in the UK, or we, you know, have got multiple options by going abroad. Because if it doesn't work first time, then that, it's game over. Like, if we do it in the UK, and I don't want that pressure, and it's not, you know, it's probably not going to work with a 3-5% chance. And like I say, donor conception hadn't been mentioned to us in the UK, so that wasn't on our radar. So, I mean, ultimately, I suppose she just had to go with it. But yeah, she was terrified.
So yeah, I guess it's more the fear for you. Yeah. That was what it was
about safety. And, you know, like I always say to people, it isn't safe and ethical to go anywhere. So you must do your research. So what I'm not sat here saying is, one, that it's right for everybody. because it won't be. Some people, it's just too much. You like you said, Alice, before we started recording, it's going through fertility treatment is a lot anyway. For some people, adding in going abroad, it's too much. You know, and that's it's not right for everybody. But for lots of people, it can be right. And if you do your research and you know that you go into a safe clinic, an ethical clinic, you know, in a safe country and one that really meets your need. You know, there's some great places out there. And I suppose that's my message. And it's about people having choice, some choice, because so much choice and control is taken away from us. So to have some of that back, I think is a really good thing. And I think you mentioned before, Alice, about like mindset. Please don't get me wrong and think that I'm completely positive all the time, because it's not true. No one is. I am naturally a glass half full person. But going back then, I mean, I honestly didn't recognize myself at times. I felt very angry, very jealous, very bitter. I mean, I had thoughts where I was just so jealous of other people. And that's not really in my nature naturally, but I think infertility just brings out all the feels. And I used to really like, really kind of crucify myself over that and think, oh my goodness, I must be such a bad person to think these things, when actually what was happening to me was the bad thing. And I think sometimes, you know, people will experience different emotions, but that's normal. It's okay. It's what you do, isn't it? It's your actions, not your feelings. And I think speaking now, I suppose, from the scar rather than the wound, it's easier for me to kind of stay in the present. But you know, we still may have challenges in the future, depending on how Albie feels about how he came to be, our little boy. But I know that it's pointless for me to let my mind spiral and keep worrying about something that may never even happen. So I try and keep myself very present, but that's taken some sort of, you know, practice. And like I say, I'm kind of through the other side, really. So it's easier for me now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, it's a process. And you know, a lot my members will know that we never counsel feelings in the life raft. Like, we always acknowledge and honor them, because trying to just be positive all the time, it just is robotic and not human. And what we do is like welcome everything in, so that actually, you know, the anger's welcome, the frustration's welcome, even the jealousy is welcome, because it's teaching us something that needs to be healed, or it's showing us the way that, you know, we need to focus back on our own self-compassion, or whatever it is. But yeah, I think the fact that you then also had to, so you dealt with the, you know, you dealt with the diagnosis on both sides, you dealt with having to lose the weight, you dealt with having to change your plan completely, because you had to then look for other options. You looked into surrogacy, looked into adoption, decided to go abroad. And then you had to go through the acceptance of, right, we're going to need to do double donor. So there was all sorts of levels that I wonder if by the stage they were like, it's not going to work. You might have been like, okay, fine, whatever, whatever, whatever. Let's just get off with it, because you'd already been through so many different things. Do you think there's something in that? Like, you'd already
Yeah, I do, because finally someone's saying, but you've got an option. And I know I don't want to sound flippant when I go, we were like, yeah, okay, let's do that. Obviously there were feelings and things around it, but it was quite an easy yes decision for us. It isn't always for lots of people, and that's okay too. You know, because some people say, oh, but I'm not as confident. And I'm like, that's okay. You know, I'm not here to say to you, well, you should just be like fine about donor conception. We're all different. Yeah. But for us at that point, finally, somebody was saying to us, we can help you. And I think, like you said, Alice, because we had looked at adoption, which wouldn't have been our biological children, I just felt like, well, do you know, if we're happy to do that, then at least this way I get to, if it works, carry a child, give birth to a child. They'll have some of my epigenetics, because I'm going to be feeding this baby through my placenta, and they're going to be with us from birth, and, it, you know, influenced by our environment, matched to us. So we get to control some of that. So yeah, we were just, it was just an instant yes from both of us. Mm. We were just relieved at last to be finally flipping, moving forward, because it just been going on for so long, and it's draining, it's exhausting, as you all know. And you know, like you were talking before about feelings, and I wish things like this had been around when I was trying to conceive, because what I did was I was just like some sort of machine. Mm. Moving forward, moving forward, moving forward. And like through my failed cycles, I was just like, right, let's get on to the next one. And I was upset, But it was like I put everything in this box in the back of my head and just was desperate, as we are, to have a baby. And what I should have done was slow down and dealt with each failed cycle, and I didn't. And then what happened was I had a very anxious pregnancy, and which is common, I think, for people who've had fertility treatment anyway. And then when my son was born, had horrendous postnatal depression, which I, all of everything I'd been through, you know, and at one of my lowest points, didn't want to be here. It was truly like horrendous. And I had it for 18 months. I didn't dare speak up till about, Albie was about 9 months old. And even though at the time I worked for Children and Families Service, so I knew really they wouldn't take him off me. And I had no doubt about my love for him, and my postnatal depression was nothing to do with him. I was like, I'd convinced myself that they'd think that I was a terrible mum. And I thought, if I speak out, people are going to think I'm so ungrateful. You know, I've had IVF. What's beautiful, babe? What was wrong with you, Emma? You know, what was wrong with me is I had postnatal depression. I'd been through a lot of unresolved trauma. And I found, by luck, I was given a counsellor, and I only had a couple of sessions with her, and I thought she was okay, but then she went off on sick, and I was given this other lady who was just an absolute babe, a man who, like, she just got me. I didn't, you know, I felt really comfortable with her, and we worked one-to-one, and she gave me counselling and CBT, and it literally changed everything. And, you know, I feel like she saved my life. Like, she brought my quality of life back, and, you know, I was then able to enjoy being a mum. And I wish I'd have spoken out sooner, but if I'd have had support perhaps earlier, then I think that would have been helpful. Like with all my clients, when they either get a positive or a negative, I always say, I really suggest you consider like some support, because you think that getting to that point is, then it solves everything. But actually the anxiety of lots of people, the trauma of lots of people continues. And so support is super important, but having it while you're going through it, I think is probably more helpful than trying to
resist
everything after.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I'm so sorry you went through that. I can't imagine how, you know, you already had been through such a lot, and then to be dealing with PND must have been incredibly, incredibly tough. So yeah, thank you for sharing that with us as well. But I really think, and thank you for saying this as well, because I think that there is a lot to look into. It's like this unresolved trauma, and why, you know, actually, if we take the time, which is exactly what we do here in The Raft, isn't it, people, is that we really, really do honor everything that comes up. And I really try to help people to move through these feelings and thoughts and everything in a really healthy way, so that nothing is, you know, you're not keeping things in there, because it does build up and it ends up, you know, you don't know which way it's going to go. I'm not saying everybody is going to experience that, but it's certainly important. I mean, for me, you know, mindset is the number one thing that should be on there. I mean, I just think mindset work, or whatever you want to call it, you know, support, whatever it is, and wherever you get it, it needs to be the number one thing, because then everything else is dealt with in a really conscious and informed way, from a place of, like, you know, feeling centered, feeling grounded, feeling like you've got something to get you, like, if things do go in a different direction to what you plan or what you hope for, you've always got that, you know, support. So yeah, thank you for saying that. I think, yeah, early support from the beginning, from the start. I really think it would be life changing. But I'm so glad that you found this babe of a counsellor who saved your life, and it's just incredible, you know, support and what it can do, and to be able to be vulnerable and have the courage to be vulnerable and say, I'm not coping, or I'm not well, you know, I need some help, can be the
that's the hardest bit of the thing, because I was just so worried that people would think I was ungrateful and that I was somehow whinging about things when this is all I ever wanted, when actually, when we kind of scratched the surface, it was nothing to do with having a baby as such, it was everything else that I just tried to just get on with. And that's why now, I mean, I'm obviously not a trained coach or anything, but with like my clients, you know, that I work with one-to-one, for them to have that support from somebody that's been there, like, I know the kind of the crunch points for people, and just been able to sort of check in and make sure people are doing okay, and to signpost if they need any extra help, and to suggest things. I think, you know, wherever you get your support from, it's invaluable that you get some. I mean, now, you know, even if people haven't got budgets, there's free communities and things online, like we said, that weren't there before. We were going through infertility.
It's like support can look like all kinds of different things, like listening to this podcast is a form of support, you know, anything, you know, if it's internal support that you give yourself or it's external, whatever it is, just knowing that you're not alone, knowing that it's normal for whatever feelings are coming up and that you are, you know, you're not whinging, you're not whatever it is, you know, at whatever stage, it's just so, so important not to hold on to the stuff that you, that comes up, you know? How are we doing? Yeah. So guys, people who are live and listening, do drop questions into the chat if you have them as I'm chatting to Emma. I'm going to ask some more now that have come through. But yeah, do pop them in there. Let me just get some up because I want to talk a little bit more about the people that you support and the things that they come to you with. I mean, one of the things that I think is just so key here is just talking about the cost of IVF. The cost of treatment and not just IVF, but the cost of treatment. Do you have, actually, this question, do you have anyone who comes to you who wants to, because obviously it's called Your IVF Abroad, but do you send or support people not just for IVF, different kinds of treatment?
Yeah, all kinds of fertility testing and treatment apart from surrogacy, because it's not something that I have experienced, understand enough. It's very, very, very complex. So it's not something I feel comfortable with. But yeah, IUI, sorry, it's sun shining in on me.
Lovely. I'm jealous.
It is lovely. Any fertility testing and treatment in Europe.
Okay. So it's all in, instead of kind of doing all of the initial tests here, if for any reason, you know, you can't get the NHS funding, or it's the waiting often can be the key. So tell me about the people that come to you and the sort of things that they're going through that have led them to find you and pick up the phone and call you.
Yeah, so actually I have clients all around the world, which is mega. So clients here in the UK and Ireland, I've had clients in Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, because in all of those countries they're very expensive, like here. I get a lot of people, not all, who have accessibility issues. So be that to state funded, usually to state funded treatment. So I'll get a lot of single ladies. I'll get people who are older, in inverted commas, people with higher BMIs, people in same-sex female couples, people who have had multiple failed cycles in their home country and want a different take. And I get a lot of people who have moving from own egg treatment to donor egg or double donation and want options, because abroad you've got options around anonymity and non-anonymity, plus the costs are even the cost differences are even greater. So that's kind of the people that I get. I tend to work with people, I mean, literally kind of up to sort of mid 40s from and kind of late 20s, a real mixture of lovely, wonderful humans. And what was the other question you asked me, Alice? Sorry, I've lost my train of thought.
Oh, no. Well, I was just interested to hear, like, who is it? Who contacts you? And so it's a real, it's quite a mix, isn't it? And obviously,
A real mix. And people who are looking for that kind of impartial view. And people who recognise the importance of support usually. And, you know, some people it's about saving money, but often actually that's not the first thought. I mean, I always say to people that we're not looking for cheap fertility treatment here. We're looking for good value. But people who want to be matched to a clinic that meets their needs, because while I'm obviously not medically trained and can offer no medical advice whatsoever, through the research and my collaborations with clinics, I've learned who are specialists in what, but also who are, you know, how they work. So in terms of people's personalities and medical needs, I know kind of who to suggest, and also with people's budgets, so that they get a really good fit. And I offer three clinics, and then they can then see them, and ultimately they've got to decide who's right for them. So I think giving people back some of that control and choice, then they can kind of relax, can't they? And you know, I do think kind of lining people up with a clinic that really meets their needs gives them a better chance of success, particularly if your budget's going to stretch further, because we know it's a numbers game, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a real mixture of people that I support.
I love that you've said that, because, right, I feel like a lot of the issue that we have with fertility treatment is not taking into account the humanness of the people going through it. And to address actually personality type with like how a clinic works and look at, is this going to work for them? Because some people will need more, you know, direct communication. Some people are going to be okay with just whatever or whatever, you know, it depends on the human going through the treatment. So actually to look at the whole person and to go, right, how is this? That's amazing. What an amazing service.
And also destination. So there's destinations where some people can't have treatment, but there's also destinations where people might not want to have treatment. So say, for example, you know, if you were a person of colour, you might not feel comfortable in certain countries. I had one client say, screw them, I'll go there anyway. I'm like, good for you. But it's my job to tell them and then they can make the informed decisions. And it's that's the thing, isn't it? Yes, I can do all the safety work and all of that kind of thing. But, you know, really finding your dream partner clinic is so important in terms of the experience that you're going to have. You know, I can't guarantee that they're going to have a baby. I wish I could wave a magic wand, but I really want people to be able to take back some control, stop the flipping waiting, get some answers, make informed decisions, stretch the budget further, and to have the best experience that they can going through this with the most support, so that whatever the outcome, they don't have any regrets. Because I think regrets is an awful place to feel, you know, to be. And that's kind of my mission, I suppose. And, you know, I don't believe in a one size fits all. So people go, hey, Emma, where did you go? And I'll be like, I went to Czech Republic. But I don't say which clinic, not because I'm trying to be like cloak and dagger, but because I know people go, well, I'll go there if Emma went there. But actually, yeah, that might not be right for you.
Absolutely.
You know, so I do believe that that is really quite an important part of it.
Absolutely. And I love that, because it's also reminding all of us that we are responsible for our own decisions. We're responsible for our own lives. We are responsible. So as much as we can gather information from trusted sources like you and other people and other places where you can find this information, it really is our responsibility to look at it and go, right, is this right for me? Rather than to just go, right, I am done with my research, can't be bothered to look anymore. You know, not I get it if you are, you know, in that mindset. And I've certainly done that before, where I'm like, you know what, if it's good enough for her, that's what I'm going to go with. But maybe not when it comes to fertility treatment. Although actually, having said that, I'm just thinking like, how did I choose? And I remember one of the ways that I actually decided on, so after we'd been through a lot of NHS treatment, I decided to have, you know, switch clinics. And one of the ways I decided was because I had a good friend, one of my only friends who I knew at the time going through it, who had just had treatment with this clinic. And one of my reasonings was like, well, it's fine, but she's done okay with her, so I will go there too. But that also comes with the caveat of like, but also I knew I just had an, you know, you kind of also have to go on a bit on.
Yeah. And I say it without judgment, you know, like it's okay. Absolutely. If you've done that or you're going to do that. But, yeah, you know, what's right for one will not necessarily be right for you. And it's why I give people three clinics, because I always say to my clients, I'm going to narrow down this massive pool. So you're going to get three safe clinics that are registered, regulated, that suit your brief, suit your needs. But ultimately, I can't tell you who to go with. You know, you need to be in touch with them. And, you know, I want to empower my clients that they can do this, that they know themselves better than anybody. Because I think sometimes along the way, people get lost and unsure, and it's such a minefield, IVF full stop, and they think about going abroad and people are like, oh, can you just tell me? And I'm like, well, all three of them suit you based on your needs. So you will get a feeling. And then ultimately, once they're in touch with clinics and they've had the consultations, they do know.
Yeah.
And they're taking that kind of a bit of control back, which I think is really important as well.
Three is a good number too. Three is good.
It's a magic number.
Too many, but it's giving you some choice. Three is good. Right, I have a question here. Hi, Emma. Thank you for sharing your story. I can resonate with the awful feelings that come with the BMI factor of things. I have a question. We were looking at going abroad, but were put off as we were told it would take months for paperwork to have our frozen goods. I'm assuming you mean your sperm, whatever it is that you're doing, to have our frozen goods shipped over. Do you know if people have faced difficulties with this recently? Think a Brexit thing.
Yeah. So thank you for your question. Pre-Brexit, it was a bit easier, but still not necessarily that easy. There are companies out there that can do it. You can do it. It is doable. Brexit's basically slowed it down and made it more expensive. Boo. But it can be done. But I suppose what you probably need to think about is when you've maybe got some costings, because it can vary and it can be like between like 2 and 3 grand, I think. Like, I mean, I don't really get involved with it too much because it's quite complex, but I like signpost people to places. But, you know, I suppose what you need to probably work out is it financially worth it for you to go abroad by shipping your stuff there? And it might be, and it might not be, you might not be motivated by finances in terms of your reason for going abroad. So it can be done. You know, the clinic that you're interested in using may have a partner. That would possibly be the easiest way of doing it, because you need to pick a clinic that will accept it from the company that you're thinking of using. So it is doable, but there is a significant cost factor to it, and there's a time factor to it as well.
Mm-hmm. And you've noticed that has got longer and more complicated because of Brexit.
Yeah, longer and more expensive. So it's just, it takes longer and it's cost more money, which is annoying.
Well, I suppose it's there, you know, it's weighing up it's weighing up, isn't it? As you say, like, is this, what's the payoff? You know, yes. If I do decide to go that route versus staying here, I mean, this is standard, like, pros and cons thing, really, isn't it?
Get all the it's doable, but you've got to work out whether it's right for you.
Yeah. And what is it that's motivating you to go abroad? You know, all of that stuff. So yeah, thank you for that. And let's support you more with that, Sarah, as well, in the raft. Like, come and chat with us and we can help you work through it mindset wise. So Lucy's saying, I've been through the process of transporting abroad and Brexit did have an impact, both time and price. Yeah. So Lucy's just recently been through all of this. So yeah, has had some personal experience, as I'm sure, you know, lots of people listening will have done as well. So if you're listening and you want to contribute to this, then definitely get in touch. You can DM us on my Instagram or underneath the post that I'm going to share on this as well. So yeah, what else do we need to ask? Any other questions, by the way, for everybody joining us live, then please drop them in. I'm going to have a look at the other ones that I noted down here. Oh, this is a good one, right? So when do you know it's time to explore IVF abroad?
So now I know what I know, I would say, why not straight away if you're considering private fertility treatment? That's not just because I've got a company in fertility treatment abroad, right? But I think sometimes, and I get this because we've been there, people think it's like a second-rate option. And perhaps in some places it might be. And as we've said, there's stuff to sort out, particularly if you're going to do it by yourself. But, you know, not only is it cheaper, there are some really world-class clinics out there. And so let's take Europe as an example. So in Europe, not all clinics, but a lot of the clinics out there are geared up really well for international patients because they get clients from all over the world coming to them to have fertility treatment. And they offer very innovative testing and techniques, and they're doing a hell of a lot more fertility testing and treatment than we are in the UK. You know, people don't come here from other countries to have their fertility treatment. They go to Europe. So, you know, if you're thinking to yourself, well, we'd only go because it's the cost difference, I suppose I would challenge you to, or invite you to, you know, think outside of that and think, actually, you know, maybe there are some other benefits. Perhaps there are some more choice of clinics. Well, there are, because you're moving from one country to, say, a continent. So perhaps we can find one in a place that we'd love to visit or we've been before that might help with the experience. We can have, you know, a holiday. When I say a holiday, it's not obviously the same as when you're not having fertility treatment. But I do believe that you know, it makes a difference. And I mean, I can't personally compare it because I haven't had fertility treatment in the UK, but I loved being away because you're not at the clinic all of the time. And my clients will go, once they get there, are like, oh yeah, no, I get it now. I understand that. So I think there's benefits to kind of being away for some people. Some people are like, oh my God, no, I just want to be at home. And that's okay. But if you are kind of, if you enjoy traveling and you enjoy going to different countries, you know, knowing that there's more choice around clinics, your budget's going to go further. I mean, there's just so many benefits if you're doing it safely and you do all your research and everything. And in some ways, I also think, depending on what your personality is like for me, doing all of that research and getting down with thinking, right, I'm going to go abroad, or I think I'm going to go abroad, and starting to look at stuff actually helped me because I felt like things were moving and I wasn't just stuck in this stalemate position. Yeah. So I would say, you know, why not consider it from the off, unless you absolutely know that it's just a step too far for you right now. For some people, it just is, or it feels that way, and you don't want to make yourself feel worse. But there's no harm in exploring it. You don't have to go if you explore something. But you know, now it is something that people are doing far more often. As we talked about, Alice, when we were having our treatment and looking at it, like, I was like some sort of lone wolf doing this. But it's not like that anymore. But you do still have to be careful. You know, you have to look at making sure you're going somewhere safe and ethical, because not everywhere is like that. And not saying that to scare you, but, you know, you do need to make sure you do everything properly, and that so that you've got that peace of mind when you go in abroad.
Yeah, absolutely. There's another question that's come through live. So she says, thank you for sharing your experiences. In terms of the sort of price difference between UK and abroad with IVF cycles or donor egg cycles, what is the sort of price difference? I know it will obviously vary from place to place and depending on circumstances. Thank you. Good question.
Yeah, good question. So it depends on where you go.
Sorry, go on. I'm just chatting extra. I'll be quiet. You answer the question.
Right. I didn't know if it'd come through from somebody else. So sorry, Alice. Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry. So you're absolutely right with those factors, you know, varying things. But what I can do is give you some examples of what treatment starts from and for what, if that's helpful. So you could have, for example, IVF, own egg, own sperm with ICSI from around about £2,200. Excluding obviously medication and your travel. And that can go up to about four and a half, 4,000. So I'm thinking in euros and pounds, about £4,000 would be that kind of bracket. Donor eggs, so I'm just going to shift my phone a little bit so I'm not squinting. Donor eggs, the savings are even more. So donor egg cycle, you might be looking at around about £6,000 for a fresh donor egg cycle. Also, a lot more things are naturally included abroad. So often things like either you pay, sometimes you pay for an initial consultation, sometimes it's free. But like if you have to pay once, it's just once. And then you don't pay generally for the rest of the consultations. You know, things like your scans are usually included. You know, a lot of the things in, like, say, the UK and America, it's every single thing is charged for. So it's kind of hard, I think, sometimes to work out what the full cost differences would be. But, you know, like for like, considerably cheaper. You know, people have had two rounds for the price of one, including everything, versus their home countries. For me, using double donation, we actually used embryo donation. And often with the donation schemes, there's guarantees around things like number of blastocysts, or like for me, it was if you weren't pregnant after your second cycle, you got the third one for free. So I actually had three rounds of embryo donation for the price of one in the UK. So, you know, the cost differences are huge.
Massively different, isn't it? I mean, what was interesting, what you said earlier, was that people don't come here for fertility treatment, they go to Europe. Is there like any kind of study or anything to show any, I'm just fascinated to see, like, what are the numbers, how many people are going to Europe for IVF treatment or any other fertility treatment?
I don't know the numbers. I know there's been, like, some of the clinics that I've talked to in the last sort of, they've said to me in the last sort of 3 years, because a journalist asked me a similar question, and they said, do you think there's been a rise in fertility tourism? So a couple of the clinics I spoke to said they'd seen sort of 5 to 10% rise in the last 3 to 5 years. I mean, I think one of the reasons people won't come here is cost, must be cost first and foremost, because, you know, we do have very good standards of medical care in the UK, don't we? I don't know why. I don't know why Europe. You know, it's difficult with things like success rates to compare, you know, because they all measure things differently. And so it's very hard to compare, like, the UK to abroad. They do, you know, the clinics, like, for example, the ones I work with have high success rates, but I couldn't say to you, well, that's higher than the UK. Well, it might be higher than the UK, but it's difficult to say to compare because they all measure things at different times. And I'm all about transparency and cutting through some of that kind of stuff. So I don't know, but I would hazard a guess that the cost is a huge thing for people. I think having a choice of clinics, but also, you know, a lot of these clinics have taken part in kind of leading the way around research and development. And, you know, a lot of doctors from abroad have worked all around the world. You know, so some of the clinics that I recommend to people are, you know, they're speaking at, you know, they're teaching at universities, they're, you know, they're coming up with some of these innovative techniques and things that we're using, and that's coming from, you know, European people and clinics. So, you know, perhaps it's some of that. And I think the accessibility is wider, perhaps, in those countries. I mean, just a note on accessibility, because what I don't want people to think is that there are some places that you could go and have fertility treatment, whether it was safe for you to do so or not. That's certainly not the countries or clinics that I work with. But I think in the UK, it's, you know, it's quite restrictive in some of the innovative testing and techniques that we offer aren't that innovative compared to Europe. Like one of my clients said to me recently that she'd been to see a consultant at a UK clinic, and he'd said, we're about 10 years behind Europe. Now, that's just, you know, an arbitrary comment, but that was very interesting. Mm. That was his take on it. You know, a lot of UK clinics send people abroad for donor eggs. So I think accessibility, innovation and cost are my suspicions. And, you know, while I can't say their success rates are higher, you do get, and I have had clients like who have had multiple failed cycles in the UK, then they go abroad and then it works. So that's my suspicion, but no, I don't have access to kind of any numbers on that. No,
it's, but really it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I'm sure at some point there will be some sort of study that will come out to say, Brexit and all of that. Okay, so we're coming towards the end of our time together. So yeah, thank you for our live questions. If anyone's got any, I'm probably got one time for one more question if anyone wants to pop one in. But I would say, like, if I was listening to this and I was thinking, I'm thinking about it, but what are the kind of, do you have like a sort of top, putting you on the pressure, on the, what's the expression? Putting you under pressure, on the spotlight. Oh my God, I can't, my brain isn't working. On the spot, thank you. on the spot. So putting you on the spot, do you have kind of, you know, top three things that you should consider before going abroad for treatment?
Yes. So my first one would be, think about destination before you think about clinic. And that's twofold. One, you've got to be comfortable where you're going to be going. It's got to be somewhere that you know, you're going to feel okay and happy to be. It's got to be somewhere that you can afford to be, like cost of living wise, but also, can you have treatment in that country? So for example, some people in certain countries, if they were single or in a same-sex female couple, for example, couldn't have treatment, which is quite outrageous, isn't it? But there you go, that's just the way that it is. Or are you a person of colour and, you know, where are you considering going? Not that you should have to consider where you're going, but for some people, you know, if they're going to go somewhere that is still quite a racist country overall, then you might not want to go there. So start with destination. Also, if you start with destination, you will feel far less overwhelmed, because otherwise it's like, where do I flipping start with this? Start with destination. And then the biggest one, obviously, is doing your homework. So it's great to find out what so-and-so thinks and so-and-so thinks, but that can also be overwhelming. But, you know, are you going somewhere that, you know, that is safe? You know, make sure they're registered, make sure they're regulated, but also, does it suit your personality? Does it suit your medical needs? Really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
And number three would be organised. Like, I don't mean that in a patronising way, but you've got to be organised to kind of keep on top of everything. If you stay organised, then, like, I used to have a little folder. I printed everything out, and I'm bringing out a journal. It's not out yet, but like a planner and a journal to help people, because that would have been super helpful for me. Mm-hmm. You know, just record everything, keep everything together will make the process feel less overwhelming. So they are my top three tips.
Great advice. Absolutely brilliant. And I think Yeah, all of that just so good for your, you know, your mind not to go spiraling, because you're keeping it grounded again, centered. And just, I like the idea of starting with destination. Also, it kind of like makes it a bit more fun. Not that yeah. it's fun, yeah. but you know, as you say, like actually going, well, actually maybe there will be some good times that I can have while I'm out there doing yeah. this. If I'm getting on a plane and, you know. So I think there's absolutely something in that, which something will, I'm sure, be happening with your brain while you're away from your home, if that's what the decision is. You know, you are so, it's, you're in such a different place. The perspective, that's, I'm particularly interested in perspectives and shifting mindsets through, you know, choosing a new lens to see things through. And if you are away, that is like a lot of the work is done for you, because you are so, you know, so in a whole completely new environment. Things you are eating, smelling, seeing, everything is just going to do something to help you move away from your standard thing. So that's really interesting, the destination thing, and then keeping it less overwhelmed. And, you know, I love the be organized tip. And I agree, you know, you can, and it's not patronizing. I think it's something that you might, I mean, some people will naturally do that. I am not naturally organized, but I have learned how to be. I have to have, I mean, in some ways I'm really not, but in other ways I know that there are certain things, and especially going through treatment particularly, it's just so important, because it helps your state of mind to reduce overwhelm, reduce stress, to just be like, okay, got everything here, I can see everything, it's all printed out. There's one thing I wanted to, one more question I want to ask you before we go. Sarah was saying, yeah, may as well enjoy it too. Yeah, why not? You know,
yeah, hell yeah. And do it at the clinic like a handful of times.
Right.
So, you know, you may as well go and enjoy that place that you've not chosen. Well, you haven't chosen to be there,
but you're there.
An opportunity journey. So, you know, being away from the stresses and strains of work are immeasurable, I think. But also now, because since the pandemic in particular, if you're thinking, well, actually, that's great, Emma, but I can't necessarily take that time off work, you know, some of my clients take some work with them, and they do a bit of both, and that works brilliantly for them, because now, of course, you know, we've shown the world that we can work remotely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, beats rushing to the home and office. Like, I remember prior to flying abroad, like, my job was out and about in families' homes, and I'd come back to the office, and I'd have to, like, set alarms on my phone to take medication, and I'd be like in someone's living room because an appointment had overrun, and then I'd have to fly back to work and then go to the toilets and inject myself in the work's toilets. I mean, it just, you know, was just really difficult. And then I went abroad and I was like, once I got there, I was just like, stressed before, you know. And if you can get some support through whatever, like, I've got a free podcast, I've got loads of free resources up to kind of my one-to-one support. If you can get some support with it, honestly, I think it will help so much with kind of reducing that kind of those stress levels.
Well, I think, yeah, absolutely, because it's become something that's just something else that you're doing, rather than the absolute be all and end all focus that, of course, I absolutely get it. It is, the stakes are very high. So it's never going to not be like, oh, such a huge thing that I'm going through. But at the same time, I can completely see how, you know, doing it this way, it becomes just something that you are doing alongside your life, alongside living, which so often we forget to do.
I stopped living completely. I stopped. I let any joy go out of my life. I stopped everything. And actually, they were quite nice times I had away. That was some of the nice parts of it. You know, and now for us, like, the Czech Republic obviously holds a very special place, and we'll take my son there one day. You know, and we did have a nice time there, you know, we did nice things. As I said earlier, it's not the same as having a holiday or a city break when you're not going through fertility treatment, but you're not in that clinic the whole time, so you can distract yourself and go and do some nice things while you're there.
I think, yeah, well, my thought's gone. I'll ask. I had one more thing I was gonna say, no, it's gone. Just one more thing I wanted to say, because you were saying in your top three tips, and you were saying, you know, make sure it's safe. How do people do those? Like, where do they go for the checks? Because here we have the HFEA. That's a UK thing, right? It's not like the HFEA is Human Fertilization Embryo Authority, by the way, if anyone doesn't know. So where do you go to do that?
It's different in every country, and this is what makes it complex. One of the things that you can do, though, is you can contact the country's Ministry of Health. And if you are dealing with countries within Europe that are in the European Union, finding out if they have members within ESHRE or ESHRA, depending how you pronounce it, which is a bit like our equivalent to the HEFA in the UK, because that means that, you know, standards are, ESHRE is very similar to ours. So it means that you've got those European standards. And as we know, European standards are very similar to our kind of standards, if not higher. But you've got that baseline that you know that you're going somewhere that is safe. You need to be considering, you know, ethical practice in that country and what ethics means to you, because everyone's different and there's no judgment. What the political landscape's like, you know, are you going to be going somewhere that's safe? If you're going to be doing something like donor conception, you know, things like donor welfare is very important to me, as I'm sure it is to your audience, you know, and donors not being paid. So it's not a money-making operation. So there's quite a lot that kind of goes into that sort of safety and ethics piece, I think, are kind of linked.
Yeah.
But there's no one answer, because every country is different, and that's what that's what makes it confusing, and that's why I do that kind of piece for people.
Yeah.
But you know, starting with a European EU country is a good place to start.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you?
Okay, so I'm over on the gram at Your IVF Abroad. My website is yourivfabroad.co.uk, and I also have a podcast as well called Your IVF Abroad. So that's a great place to go, and like, especially if you're kind of trying to work out if it's right for you or not. I then offer services as well to help people depending on what stage you're at. So if you know you're at the stage where you're just trying to figure out if you want to go and you want to ask some questions, I've got, you know, you can book a one-off call up to kind of full support to find a clinic and support people through treatment as well. I also have a blog, which you can find on my website too, where I write about different things. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Fabulous. Amazing. Thank you so much. And yeah, so I was saying, interesting chat. Yeah, it was really interesting. Tonight, laugh, as we got called tonight. Yeah, super helpful. Amy says, amazing, Emma. Thank you so much. So yeah, incredible. And it's been enlightening. Thank you. So yeah, amazing chat, incredible story. And we really appreciate your time and your energy. Oh, that's what I was going to say, one thing before we go.
Yes.
Is that there's just around the joy and the different energy that you get from being and choosing IVF Abroad. So for anyone who is in my membership, I just want you to note this, because I teach a framework called the Life Raft Framework, and we have different kind of columns in these frameworks. So it's interesting because the energy clear is one of the pieces that I teach and that we look for, and sometimes we need the energy clear. So I was just wanted to drop that in to people who are in my membership, to think about that and to think about the joy that you were talking about, Emma, and where it left you and where you actually found it coming back when you did make this proactive, empowered decision to go abroad to have your treatment.
Yeah, so, just had a bit of control back, which is massive when you're such, I don't know about you guys, but my clients tell me I felt very out of control, and that's a horrible place to feel. So if you can just get a little bit of control back and focus and momentum for things to move forward, and for some people gain some answers and clarity, is massive.
Yeah,
because being stuck in that limbo of not knowing what's happening is, I think, one of the worst bits.
Absolutely. The proactivity, yeah, completely. The proactivity piece is huge. So yeah, I wanted to just pop that in at the end. Lucy's saying, I relate to the out of control here, and then the relief and joy of choosing to go abroad. It was a huge mindset shift for me. I felt joy during it. Love that, Lucy. Thanks for sharing.
Oh, good. Yeah, thank you.
Amazing. All right. Well, thank you so much again. The messy ending because of my crazy brain. But yeah, we are really appreciative of your time, and want to thank you so much. So go and find Emma at Your IVF Abroad on Instagram and all the other places that she's at. I'll put it in the show notes as well. All right.
Thank you very much for having me.